Will you please join me in the Serenity Prayer? God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Our speaker tonight is being recorded with her permission, or in this case, her sponsor's permission. CDs can be purchased from Darren after the meeting. I'd like to introduce tonight's speaker. I've known our speaker tonight since she was 18, which was a couple years ago, and I've had the privilege of walking this journey of recovery with her, watching her grow and change. And I will tell those of you who are new, if you listen to Michelle's story of experience, strength, and hope, you will see for yourself the hope that if this can happen for her, it can happen for you. Our speaker tonight, all the way from Tustin Ranch, Michelle.
I'm Michelle. I'm an alcoholic. She wants me to cry. She has a bet on how many times I'll cry. If you're new, welcome. There's a lot of newcomers. Welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. And if you don't hear from me something that you relate to, please go to another meeting. There's so many meetings. There's meeting directories up there. You can find a new meeting. And my hope for you is that you find somebody you feel safe enough to be honest with so that you can tell the truth. And that's what I have with Patio. She is my sponsor. And I have a home group. It's the Bellflower Big Book Group. And I have a sobriety date. It's June 28th of 1998. And so if I stay sober a day at a time, I always hear people say, if God's willing, I'll be sober. But I think my God is willing already. So I don't say that. That's my little thing, because I think my God wants the very best for me. It's me that gets in the way. And so if I don't take a drink or anything else between now and next week, I will have a birthday. And I didn't want to come tonight. I did plead to my sponsor that. And I want to thank you, Marcia, for following up, because you were going to be my way out if you didn't call. And I thank you, though, because my life is in session right now. And I've got it coming from so many directions. I'm a very challenged life at the moment. And there really could be no better place for me to be than here. My sponsor said to say that. And, you know, at least I'm not watching Dog the Bounty Hunter. And it's an outside issue, but that is my favorite show. I, had to have, a memorial. They took it off the air. I was so sad, but I got all the reruns taped. And Bounty Hunter. Anyways, so I am 48 years old. I am a mother, I'm a daughter, I'm a sister, I'm a sponsor, I'm a sponsee, I have a dog, and I didn't have any of those relationships intact when I got to you. I come from a long line of alcoholism. I don't think that's why I'm an alcoholic, new ones. I think I'm an alcoholic because I have the disease of alcoholism. I have many family members that come from the same blood that I do, and they're normal, or so-called normal, whatever. And I am an alcoholic because once I put alcohol into my body, all bets are off with me. I have the obsession about drinking, when am I going to drink, how am I going to drink, where am I going to steal it, how am I going to steal from my parents to get what I need to do, and I obsess and obsess, and then once I get the alcohol into my body, the craving starts, and one drink is never enough for me. I love tequila. Tequila is my drink of choice. I'll drink anything, but tequila is my friend, and or was my friend. I'll mourn tequila with dog. And so I got to have a sense of humor. Trust me. There's so much going down around me, and I have to have a sense of humor with my life. I started drinking when I was about 13 years old. I don't know exactly, because drinking wasn't like taboo in my house. My birth father had committed suicide. He was an alcoholic. My mom had moved out here from Kansas with 5 children. And I was only 1 year old when he gassed himself in our car drunk and took his life. And so I didn't know him. I didn't meet him. I have older brothers and sisters that have lots of memories. But I met the man that was going to become my father when I was like 6 years old. And we were living in Anaheim, next door to the Hells Angels. We lived off of blue chip stamps. And I was really comfortable. I didn't know any different. And I met this man on our couch one morning. My mom said they had just gotten back from church. And I knew my mom didn't go to church. And about a month and a half later, they were married. And he had 4 children. He was Irish and Catholic. And well, we moved into their house. Their mother had also committed suicide in their home on pills and alcoholism. And so they put all 9 of us kids together. They weren't living off of blue chip stamps. They were very wealthy, and it was a big change for me. It really was. And we moved into their house. There was a bridge over the pool. We had horses for Christmas. We had our own barn. We lived in North Whittier then off Peck Road. And I had my own bedspread. I had my own room away from my brothers. And he was a Budweiser beer distributor. So it was not taboo to drink at home. It just had to be Budweiser. And any girls know that beer gets you fat. And I learned that later on. That's why I switched to whiskey. And I would drink at home. And there's a lot of things going on in my house. I mean, my family is the type of family that what goes on inside your home stays inside your home. And I remember, I don't know, it was maybe a year and a half ago I was here sharing, and my mom was here, and she's not in the program, and she sat like a couple rows back, and she was horrified that I would speak to my family from up here. And she kept interjecting from the audience, and she's 82 years old, and trying to clarify. I don't know. It was so funny. Patty knows my mom. Missy knows my mom. A few people know my mom in here, and she lives in San Clemente. So if you end up thinking you know me or her through this, do not break my anonymity that I spoke of her. She will be horrified. And but my family is the type of family that what went on behind closed doors stayed behind closed doors. You don't talk about it. Any problems in the family is family business. And it didn't matter whether my brother was, you know, shooting heroin. My stepbrother was a heroin addict. Or they were growing weed in my backyard, or somebody was drunk. We never talked about it. Whether my mom was throwing a coffee pot at my dad, or my dad was packing up the car one more time to get away from everything. He never really left, just for one night. And we just never talked about those things. So we moved from North Whittier down to San Clemente. I lived in Riviera and started high school down here. And I remember going to the bus stop, and somebody asked me if I wanted to smoke a joint. I didn't even know what that was at the time. And I was such a people pleaser. I've always wanted everybody to get along. I don't like to acknowledge any kind of conflict or any uncomfortability whatsoever. I want it just to go away. And I was so uncomfortable that morning. And so when the girl asked me to do that, I didn't know the difference between pot and heroin. I knew, I really didn't. And I was scared to death of it. But I was more scared of not getting the approval of this girl being new. And so I did that, and never was my forte. I'm not a pothead like my son. And my kid thinks he's Bob Marley's kid. And that's one of these wrinkles here. I've got one for everybody. And I'm a worrier. And So anyways, I went on and we went down to the beach and played Spin the Bottle and Truth or Dare. I was young and everybody stole what they could from our parents' house and booze. And I remember coming home and my brothers, irregardless of their behavior, started lecturing me on boys, on sex, on drugs, on alcohol, and why I shouldn't do this and that, and did I know about this and that. And I've always had the ability to listen until you're done talking. I'm really not interested. I've always been a 2x4 girl. Like, I'm going to have to go at it head on and learn my own lessons. It might take 8 2x4s before I'm down. But I don't listen. I don't go off of other people's experience or lectures because somehow, some way, I'm going to figure out. You know how we are. We're so creative. And so I started drinking whenever I could. My parents in the 10th grade, my dad was much older and he wanted to be closer to one of the Budweiser plants, so they moved us to Downey. I didn't want to move to Downey after living it here, and so I decided to run away. I wasn't runaway material. And I got my friend Ronnie, who lives down here, and she was visiting me, and we put out our thumbs and we hitchhiked back to San Clemente, and I decided to throw a party in my parents' house. They had just sold in Riviera, and the neighbors called the police, and it was one of the first of many times where the police are going to pull up, put me in the car, call my family, and then I'm going to be posed with this question: Michelle, why do you drink? You have so much potential. I didn't even know what that word meant, but I guarantee you almost every person in this room has had tons of potential. And I probably do today too. And and they're asking me, why do you drink? I could not tell them why I drank. I didn't know why I drank until I tried to get sober. And so I continued drinking. I was working on and off at the beer plant through high school. I started getting in a lot of trouble. I have a twin brother, and he went to St. John Bosco, and he would go out, come home in the same night. He would study in order to get good grades. He was just like a good guy. I mean, he still, like, coaches, and they're down back in San Clemente now, and he married his high school sweetheart and has 0.2 kids and everything. And I just, those things were, like, so out of my realm. I was so undisciplined. I was call of the wild. I would water down my parents' booze. They traveled a lot. He had another distributor in Palm Springs, so they would go back and forth, and they would travel, and I just got in tons of trouble. I'd steal from my parents. I would crash many, many cars. I would get in a lot of trouble. I had a fake ID when I was 15. My first bar was the Mississippi Moonshine, and you used to be out of smoking bars, and it was rock and roll. I was loving rock and roll then, and tequila, whiskey, a cigarette, and some other outside issues just felt right. And I had a great, great time, and I used to close the bar and then bring it home to my parents' house, and they would steal from my parents, and it wasn't a good situation. And my parents started getting fed up. I started getting in trouble with the law. And I always looked innocent in high school, even. I had blonde hair, and I always dated. I've always been attracted to offbeat people, always. I don't like the norm. I never have. And I, in high school, was like that. I was in a club. They had girls' clubs or sororities, whatever, in high school that I went to in Downey, and I was part of the Norman Ear Club, and you have to try out to make it. It's so humiliating, and carry a baby egg around, and mine dropped, and so they made me run behind a car forever. And I remember getting kicked out of the Norman Ears because they said I was a loadie, and I was horrified, and not really. I didn't want to wear the brownie uniform anymore, but I remember it was a big turn for me in high school. My friends changed, and I started dating this guy that I thought was feared by the people he should have been and respected by the people he should have been. And I mean, what did I even know? Nothing, except I like to drink and get high. And I ended up, the guy had been in jail, and I thought I was his girlfriend because I took his collect calls. And I didn't know, right? And he got out of jail without telling me, and I didn't know now, but that was a resentment. And I was fit to be tied. And I felt so dismissed. And so I went over to the sports page with this guy, Jimmy Y, to get drunk enough to feel the way that I needed to feel to walk into the Mississippi moonshine, like, with my shoulders back feeling hot, right? Because I don't have the self-esteem on my own. I don't have it. And that's just the truth. I never had any self-worth until years into my sobriety. And so somehow I started drinking that night martinis at the sports page. And I never drank martinis before. And I don't know what ended up happening. One way too many. And I ended up making the wrong turn and running into these people's house in my car, and he jumped out and ran, and I tried to tell the police officer I wasn't driving, and he said, why are your sandals under the gas pedal? And they arrested me in my polka dot dress and took me to Downey, and I was crying, and I asked for a Kleenex because snot was running out my nose, and because I cried good. And they just laughed at me, and they transferred me to Norwalk, and it was going to be my first time to spend the night in jail, and they were getting us ready to go to Civil Brand. And I remember meeting my roommate in jail, or whatever she was, my whatever, you know what I mean, my, what is she, my cellmate, and she was so nice. Like, I was afraid of the toilet, and she was a prostitute, and like her man in charge wasn't going to get her out. And my dad was there the next morning. And New Ones, it's one out of millions of times that I'm going to humiliate my family, use my family's name, and embarrass them. I embarrassed my father over and over. And because my father used to let the Norwalk sheriffs use his Budweiser plant for their hospitality parties. So he came down, and it just was a mess. And eventually he was able to get me out. He didn't know you need cash to get out. And so they got me out, and he took me by to show me what I had done to the car. And then I called my mom and asked if I could come back home. And she said, if you promise not to drink or do any drugs in this home. And I promised her. I was so scared. I was so hungover. I was so tired. And you know how we are, New Ones? We make those promises, and we mean them when we're that wiped out. And then I got some food in my stomach, a little rest, and then I got that thing that I call the call of the wild. And it just comes up, and I gotta go. I thought, oh, this isn't going to work out for me. And I left, and I started drinking and using, and this girl let me live with her, and I was having an affair with her fiance, and she didn't know it. And I was at her house one night, and everybody was getting high and drinking, and she had this cat, and the cat was perched up on the chair and staring at me the whole time. And I knew the cat knew, and I was like trying to get the cat high. I was like, oh, this is so not right. And I got in the car, and this car really wasn't mine. I had gotten the guys at the warehouse at the Budweiser plant. They used to call me Miguelita. I spoke good Spanish because I needed to manipulate them and get my stuff done. And I convinced them that my father said I could take a salesman's car, and at like midnight, and I took off in this car. So they didn't know where I was, but that night I was in this car. And I took off from the girl's house, and I was too drunk as usual to be driving. And I sideswiped a Norwalk sheriff. And it was a bad situation. And so one more time, I'm back in the Norwalk sheriff's. And then my father finds out. They hadn't registered my other DUI, I guess is how it happened, but they released me on my own recognizance. And believe it or not, and I don't know how that happened, but granted, it was back in like 84. And so long story short, my family ended up finding out I'd broke into their house when they were gone, and It was always drama. And they found out that I was there, and they sent all these people over, and they sent me to Genesis at South Coast Hospital. The first time I went through there was 84. And that's where I met Patty, and I thought I was too young to be an alcoholic, plus I was a girl. And I thought it was so embarrassing what they would say from the podium. And I left there at 30 days thinking, okay, I got it. And my mom was so proud. She brought me a new dress and everything. And one more time, I'm going to break her heart and my family's heart. And they used to send, Genesis used to send your first step when you went home in the mail to you. And my first step came in the mail. And that night I was going to a Michael Jackson concert with this guy that my parents would let me go out the front door with. And before we left for the Michael Jackson concert, my mom told the guy that I was alcoholic and I was in AA. I was so embarrassed, right? So I had to do damage control. We get out to the car. I go, well, I am in AA, but in AA, they let you drink Kahlua. And, you know, it's like chocolate milk, right? It goes down easy. It's not real alcoholic-like. Kind of like beer. And, so the poor guy bought me a bottle of Kahlua. And all of a sudden I was looking at him and I was like, I gotta go. I can't do this. And I get the alcohol in me and I'm gone. Called my friends. They picked me up. I was off and running again. I ended up back in South Coast Hospital in 85. And it was either that or go to jail because my court dates had came up. And I went to South Coast Hospital. I was 190 pounds bloated with the disease of alcoholism. And I was 21 years old now. And I turned 21 in December, and my sobriety date was January 10th of 85. And I ended up staying sober for quite some time. I ended up falling in love with AA. I was with Patty. I was with a lot of people. I was at the Canyon Club. I left the hospital, I went and lived in New Directions, and then I went from New Directions, and I moved into this co-ed home, this man, Jim Nugent, who's passed. I lived there, and then we tried to start our own recovery home, like with 9 months, remember Aida? And I started to fall in love with AA. I got I was on formal probation, and I used to have to check in once a week, and then it got dropped to informal, and I was able to get a driver's license to drive to and from AA and to and from my new job. I got a job at a law firm in Newport Beach as a mail clerk. And I ended up falling in love with Alcoholics Anonymous. I started a young people's meeting off El Toro with all of my friends. We had a big crew of young people. And we'd go to dances, and we had a really good time. And I ended up meeting somebody at the meeting and started dating him, and I moved from Laguna to Bellflower to be with him, and ended up really active in AA, sponsoring a lot of women, and I had a sponsor, and I thought that everything was going to be okay because I was in AA. And because I was like with so-called active people or the right people in AA, and nothing would happen to me, my marriage or anything. And I ended up getting married and had my son. Cody's 21 now, so that was a long time ago. And after I had my son, things changed because I couldn't go to, because we used to go to like 5 to 7 meetings a week. He belonged to this men's stag. That was like their own culture and within AA more or less. And things changed and people started changing sponsors from me because I wasn't, I couldn't go that to the meetings like I used to with my son. And everything just started changing for me. And I one day gave my ex-husband an ultimatum. I said, that's it. It's either regular AA or that group. And men don't like ultimatums, and it had been coming for quite some time, and my father had been diagnosed with bone cancer at that time, and the sponsor that I'd had had moved to the desert, and he got on his motorcycle, and he left, and I was devastated, and I had this little boy, and I moved a bunch of people in my house from the program, and I thought, okay, now I'm single. I got to start losing weight and shaping up. And me and my girlfriends that moved in, we started going to AA dances. And then I started taking diet pills in order to lose weight. And then I started going to NA. And then I started getting tattoos. And then I started wearing Pendletons. And then I started throwing my shoulders back. And I'm like, what's up? Then I'm snorting the diet pills. And me and snorting diet pills like aren't a good combination because I'm a nervous girl. And so it just didn't work out in my favor. And I remember one night then from the NA, I changed, and then it was nightclubs. And see, here's what happens, new one. It's like all these old ideas started coming in. My father died, by the way, and my whole family split apart. And I couldn't talk. Like, it killed me inside. And it was just a really demonstrative family situation that happened, and I hated it. And and my divorce happened, and I felt like a loser because of that. And all of a sudden, I'm trying to fix so many things, and I'm snorting these diet pills, and I'm drinking near beer. And I'm not going to debate near beer with anybody after the meeting, but anything that has 0.08 alcohol, like, isn't for my body, and isn't for me. I'm an alcoholic, it's the fantasy, it's the illusion, that it all starts with old ideas. And and if you're not spiritually fit, which I wasn't, I got sicker and sicker. And one night I was in a bar, and now my old self-esteem is rearing its ugly head. Zero. I'm comparing my insides to these girls in the bar, their outside, and I don't think I measure up. I'm back to how I used to feel as a kid, and I don't measure up. And I know how to measure up. You put me in those places long enough, and I had a girl that I had sponsored for 11 years, and because I started drinking right before my 13th birthday in my old sobriety. And I had a girl I sponsored for 11 years. She was beautiful. And like whenever she walked in, I was just like, who's your friend? So it wasn't hard. That night we were down at this bar called Twin Palms in Fashion Island. And I had, it was big back then. It was a big club and a big bar. And we were there, and I asked these guys to occupy her. And I went on the other side of the bar at the very corner, and I ordered 3 shots of tequila. And because I knew what would stop the screaming madness that was starting inside of me, coming up to choke me and tell me that I was nothing, and that wouldn't allow. I couldn't dance. I couldn't be free the way that I thought I needed to be free. And I took those 3 shots of tequila, and it was like, pew, pew, pew. What alcohol does for me, and it did it for me then too, it puts the nerves back in my skin. But once I started drinking, everybody's story is different that goes back out. And mine is that it was like I'd never quit drinking. And once I started, I could not stop. And now my little boy's 5 years old. And I start doing things that I hear about in AA. And I start getting dressed and putting my robe over my night clothes. And I start drinking because I got to drink before I go out in order to feel like I'm part of wherever I go. And I start drinking, and I leave my beautiful little boy at home by himself once he falls asleep, with every intention of getting home before he wakes up. And I love my son as much as anybody in this room, as much as my normie sister-in-law's, but I have a disease of alcoholism. And if I got to choose between, once I put that into my body and the craving develops, if I got to choose between my boy and a bottle, I'm going to take a bottle. And it doesn't make me a bad person. It makes me an alcoholic mother and an alcoholic person. And many, many times I would come home. I'd get home in the next morning, and my son wouldn't be at kindergarten. And he'd be asleep at the top. We still live in the same home. And he'd be asleep at the top of the stairs with the dog that we had back then. And because he had woken up in the middle of the night looking for me. And trust me, I know there's parents in here. And I felt like this big. Nobody needed to tell me I was that big. I felt that big. And so what do you do when you feel like that? If you're alcoholic, you go pour a little brandy, make some coffee, pour the brandy in the coffee, start trying to settle yourself down. And I act to Cody like everything's okay. Get dressed. We're going to be okay. Let's go to school. And then the teachers start calling. Why is Cody not able to keep his head up at school anymore? Why is he falling asleep during class? And then you start ignoring the phone calls. And then I start getting in trouble. I start hanging around people that I have no business. I had never seen a gun in my whole life. And I start hanging around with people that are dealing drugs, that are carrying guns, that this is on tape. So anyways, that I have to perform whatever for whatever. And you know what I mean? And it was what it was. And I put myself in a lot of sellout situations. And again, I'd do it all over again if I start drinking and using, because it's just what I do and what most of us do in these rooms. I mean, I don't know what bottoms you have or what degrees that you'll go to get a drink and do that, but mine extend pretty far. And a lot of terrible things happened, and circumstances happened behind that. I was gone for 2 years, and I eventually, just to shorten this, is that I ended up trying to get sober in December. I had crashed my car in Santa Ana, and I had been up for days, and my son was in the car, and I hit this man. I didn't know he was an attorney, and I had no driver's license, no insurance. I had taken out a bad loan on my house that had been paid off, and I met some good friend in a bar that illegally took this loan out, even though my mother's name was on my home. And I had gotten a credit card. I started getting really smart, and I had gotten an illegal credit card in my mom's name sent to my house for like $25,000. And that's how I survived. And so all this stuff started closing in on me. And in December, my brother, who's in the program in San Diego, came down. They tried to get me sober. They took me out to the desert to see my family for Christmas. Some girls in the program bought Cody some Christmas presents. And I was going to get sober. And then I came home, and I still had some other things, outside issues at my house. And so I didn't end up getting sober until June of 1998. And the next 6 months were not about bars, and they weren't about dancing, and they weren't about friends. They were about staying in my closet. I have a really big closet, and I wouldn't come out of it. And my son would come in there and say, "Mommy, you've been in there 2 days. Come out." And I'd have my pipe in there, and I'd have my booze in there, and I'd just continuously order Kentucky Fried Chicken. And they used to deliver and accept checks. And they ended up suing me when I got sober. And literally, they have a corporate office. And Kentucky Fried Chicken sued me. And I can remember my son bringing buckets by my bed, and I'd be vomiting green bile. And and he would say, you know, because children don't know, our family members, you know, they don't know. And he'd be saying, "Mommy, we're going to be okay again." And it's like, I didn't get that till I was long sober. It's like they think it has to do with them. And so I ended up getting a girl came over on a Sunday, and these bunch of these people came around me, and I ended up getting sober. I went to a meeting in Irvine. They put a blanket on me. They poured me a half cup of coffee, and that's how I started my sobriety. I thought that I was a loser. I thought that I wouldn't be welcome back here, and it was very hard to come back to Alcoholics Anonymous. My ego was so, and I was really conflicted. And if you're new and it's not your first time here, welcome, because it says in our big book that nobody is discredited to be welcomed back here. Nobody has sunk too low or is too discredited to be welcomed. And so welcome if it's not your first time. And I hope this is a time that you're going to get it, and that nobody has to die around you, or that you don't have to die if you go back out, because our disease takes a lot of our lives. And I'm very, very lucky that I was able to rebuild my sobriety. And the way that I rebuilt my sobriety new one was a day at a time, literally a day at a time. And because there was people that had me on a list for their sponsors to stay away from because they said I was bad news. And I was like so hurt, and I would cry all the time. And I just put days together, and I had an ex-husband that was in my same group. He has like 30 years sobriety now, and trust me, I have every excuse to drink that I could come up with, and I didn't. And a day at a time, I put weeks together, weeks at a time, I put months together, and eventually I was able to rebuild my sobriety, and I have to tell you, I wouldn't trade it. My experience with drinking is what it had to be. You know, I don't wish that on anybody, but it is part of who I am, and it's part of the compassion that I have, and I have a solid, solid program. And it doesn't mean, new one, that life isn't going to happen here. It does not mean that in any way, shape, or form at all. I've worked all 12 steps. I'm extremely close to my sponsor. She's one of the closest people in my life, and I could not imagine not having her. My son has gone through all of his drinking and using, and she's been there at every hospital, every jail, taught me how to bring handy wipes, and I haven't been through anything without her. I was diagnosed with cancer years back here, and she was there for that. And there isn't anything, a relationship. I'm not good in the relationship department. As far as male, female, I'm good with sponsorship. I'm good with my sponsor. I'm good with friends. I'm good with family. But I have that area, I haven't got that down. And I just went through a situation that I'm not going to talk about, and I'm telling you, it is extremely painful. It is so painful, and the denial of somebody else's disease, I just cannot believe how far that I have come, or I can't believe I made it out without drinking and using, to tell you the truth, of the situation I just came from. And ooh, that will make me cry. It's just really fresh. And this disease is awful. And but it's all okay, and everything's gonna be okay because I'm sober, number one. And you know what? I'm not gonna quit believing in love or quit believing in this program. And God has no grandchildren. And all my old tapes are telling me like, I'm never going to be successful in this area are not true, because there's too many people here that believe in me. I just cannot give up in this area or any area of my life. And my mom, just to bring you current, I closed my business of 17 years on March 31st. That was hard on my ego. And then my partner started his journey with, I didn't know that it was drugs and alcohol. And then the same day I closed my business, my mom called me, and she had been diagnosed with a very aggressive cancer. And it has just been a hell of a 3.5 months. And there's times where I'm like, oh my gosh, God, that's it. I'm done. Like, I am not this strong. And my sponsor told me the other day, I go, I feel like I'm losing it, like I'm going to be locked up myself. I'm just like falling apart and crying again all the time, like when I was new. And she said, Michelle, that's because you've been trying to manage it all yourself. Like, I've been trying to think I need to be strong. Like in AA, it's not about that. It's about like, I can be weak, and I'm not weak, but I can be sad in front of you. It's like, it is what it is. And I'm glad, again, this is why I say have a sponsor you can tell the truth to. It's like, my life is not peaches and keen. I don't have any idea where it's going, but I'm sober today, and I have a home to go to. I start a new job on Monday, and I have a God in my life. I keep praying to God. God, just hold me up. I don't want to do what I've always done and keep so many things inside of me that I just end up drinking looks good. I'm not like a saint in AA. I'm not perfect. I make a shitload of mistakes, new ones. But that's okay. You don't have to be perfect here. Just don't drink a day at a time. Find a sponsor. Get involved in regular meetings and commitments. Hopefully you can stay sober. It won't be easy all the time, but God bless you. I hope that you can stay sober. That's it for me. Thanks.